morning, Atlanta.
Good morning, yes, Atlanta.
Yes, good morning. We're just all going to be Atlanta today. It's Wednesday, April 4th, I think, and I've had about like a quarter of a cup of coffee, so we're going to work on that during this next hour.
We got the date right, so we're off to a good start.
That is true. That doesn't always happen. So I'm Dana Barrett, one of your hosts for the lovely morning that we're having.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And joining us in the studio today
is... in the studio today, we also have Mark Kent with us, who is the Senior Director of Education and Community Engagement with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Welcome. So he's an educator, so maybe he'll be schooling us this morning. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. We'll have to see. Okay, so I have a little bit of personal news that I need to share before we get into the business.
Do tell.
Because you know how I am.
Sure.
You know how I roll. So I've been running... you know, a little bit for the last year, maybe 8-9 months, something like that. I used to run when I was a little bit younger and I stopped, or I was sporadic after that. But anyway, I've been running only on the treadmill because I'm very spoiled and I don't like pollen and I don't like heat and I don't like hills and blah, blah, blah. But I decided to run the peach tree this year, which we will have to talk about from a business perspective at some point, because it is a bajillion people running down the streets of Atlanta.
It's a huge event. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I finally decided I'm going to do it again. And I haven't done it since I was about 30.
You got a number and everything?
I got a number. It was a long time
ago.
Yeah. So I'm going to do it. So then I was like, well, you know what? I probably should run outside and see if I can actually do that. You know, that'd be a good thing to do.
Yeah, you don't want the Peachtree Road Race to be your first day of outdoor running.
Right.
It could be a little shocking.
So I did actually do 2 outdoor runs about a month ago, and then I ran a full 10K on the treadmill just to make sure I could actually run for 6.2 miles, so that was all well and good. But then I decided at the last minute to do a 5K this weekend. So I registered and I went out by myself and I was like, I don't know, this might suck. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, I ran this 5K.
Starting with a positive attitude.
Well,
it is always a recipe for success.
I know, right? Well, because I'm looking around and people are there together. You know, it's like families and friends and I'm standing there by myself like, okay, what am I doing here? It's Sunday morning. I could be sleeping or having coffee. Anyway, I decided to run this race. So I go out. It's in Dunwoody. It's called the Daffodil Dash. Whatever. Anyway, go.
Cute.
Isn't that cute? So I went out and ran it. And I won my age category.
Really?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Now
That's
you're really motivated.
Awesome.
Can you believe that? I was like, I got to the end and I was like, oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I got this.
Wow.
It was the first time I was actually happy to be a little bit older. Because I actually slipped into an older age category this year and I was like hating. I'll just say it. I'm 45. So I was in the 45 to 49 and for the first time. And I was like, okay, I like this older thing. This is working for me. This is good.
You've got an edge now.
Yeah.
Very impressive,
yeah,
Dana.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so
That's
much.
Super cool.
So I had to share that. So I got this little bracelet. You can hardly see it, but it's got a little bit of yellow on it from the daffodil. That's what I want. I want a bracelet.
Okay.
So. Yay.
Good
anyway,
for you.
That's my personal news. So, you know, I just thought
I'd
share.
Well, a lot of those runs are starting to take place. I mean, the marathon was just the weekend before last.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah, I met a guy out at this race that runs a marathon every other weekend.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
That's a lot of motivation.
Yeah. I mean, this guy had not 1 ounce of body fat on him. I'm just saying. Because he leaves it all on the road every week, you know?
Right.
Holy crap. And he probably can eat anything he wants.
Right.
That's almost enough motivation for me.
5 courses of pasta.
Right. To do it. Almost, but not quite. I think
no
I'd get
way.
Bored.
That's
yeah.
crazy. I would get bored.
I think I
running
would
that long. I don't know how you'd like. You would want to talk to somebody. I think
I would. Of course, I would. I mean,
like mile 10 would be like, all right, I'm ready for.
Dude, I was chatting with people on the 5K, like in
and
mile
still
one.
You won, but still, you won.
That's true. I was chatting with this older guy, like on the first mile. I was like jogging along. We were chatting about how much we run and blah blah blah. And then I was like, you know, I should probably conserve my breath here. You know, just thinking. But anyway, yeah, I can't help myself. I should bring a mic and, you know, interview people while I'm jogging along.
That would be so annoying.
Or kind of awesome, depending on how you want to look at it.
True.
If you're
true.
Trying to win, it would probably be really annoying. If
yes.
you're like trying to speed along and someone's running beside you with a mic in your face, that would, yeah. But I do think at some point we should talk about all this stuff that goes on like that, because it's all money. It's all money and coming into this, you know, a lot of it is for charity.
A lot of it is nonprofit.
But there's a whole sort of business side to it. There's the people that take the pictures and that have all the, you know, technology that lets you record times. And I don't know, it's kind of an interesting little thing that I never really thought about until I was out there.
Yeah. We have a good running season here in Atlanta too.
Long.
Long.
Yeah. And speaking of sports,
Yes.
Which we know very little about. Are you a sports guy, Mark?
You know what? I'm somewhat of a sports guy. I grew up in Florida, so I follow my Dolphins a little bit.
Okay. All right. Well, then you can help us out. But I did notice in the headlines there's a story about Nike releasing new uniforms for the teams, including the Falcons.
Right. They have unveiled the new Falcon uniform.
And it looks what exactly
contains
the same?
No material changes to last year's uniforms. But all in the NFL teams now need to buy these new uniforms. It's like more of that. What I'm seeing a lot of this about intelligent garments now.
I want one.
They're trying to create more clothing that is functional. I was actually reading a story a couple of days ago about the English Army, the UK Army, was designing intelligent uniforms for their servicemen.
Interesting.
That would contain actual like battery chargers so that you wouldn't have to carry your battery charger around. Because you know, if you're like a military guy, you've got like all these different things, you know, different guns, different communication devices.
Right.
All of them have a different battery.
That would be awkward if your gun battery died.
It's like, it's very complex.
Stop right there. Oh,
and
hold
they
on.
Talked about
let me
how
just, let me change my battery.
It's very mentally taxing because, you're in the middle of a war. First of all, people are shooting at you and you're trying to work out which battery goes.
And then you're like, dude,
I need my
iPod on before I can shoot you. Hold on one second. Hold on.
So anyway, I think there's this trend now for integrating more, like the Falcons uniforms don't have battery chargers anyway, so I don't know how I really made that leap. But they've got inbuilt padding, deflex padding for top hit zones. So I don't know, where do you get hit the most
Interesting.
As a football player?
I wouldn't know.
Well, it's going to be padded there now. Oh. And they're
more
fitted.
She pointed at her chest when
fitted.
She said that. I love radio.
Where am I getting hit? Maybe their shoulders.
I don't know, but then they have those big giant
shoulders.
They have
those huge, right? So it seems like that would be redundant.
Let's talk about the part you told me before we went on the air that they fit better.
Yes,
they're sexier.
Yes, they are a better fit,
and so that'll be good for us for observing. Just
with a four-way stretch.
Oh, and not just a two-way stretch or a three-way stretch, but a four-way stretch.
We call that building the fan base.
Nicely done, Mark. Way to bring home the whole story there. Love it.
So, yeah, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, in football season.
Late in the summer, right, when we start getting into this.
Right, we can go ogle the baseball players
training.
Until then. We're going to try to do some sports updates on the show, not actual sports updates, but like the business side of sports. But we know so little about sports that it's really the blind leading the blind. So we're glad you're here. You have any insights into this business of sports?
No, not a whole lot of the business side of sports, but you guys have the business side, they've got the sports side, so you'll be able to cover it.
And they have nice new uniforms, so it's all good. But I would imagine that sports business isn't that different from
the symphony business?
I mean, in a way, I would think there's some similarities.
Oh, sure. Certainly. I mean, if you think about it, we're both ways that people choose to spend their expendable dollars for entertainment or enjoyment. So
exactly.
We really look at that disposable income from a household in both sports and in entertainment.
Yeah, I would imagine that's very. I mean, obviously, there's probably a slightly different crowd.
Somewhat. You'd be surprised. There is crossover.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
We
absolutely.
Would go to both.
Right. I would.
I would, too.
So Mark, how'd you get to Atlanta Symphony Orchestra? What led you to Miss Rob?
Well, I was really fortunate enough to join them just a little over a year ago, about a year and 4 months. And before that, I was up at the Cobb Energy Center as their director of education and community outreach. And I really have done that work most of my life, mainly in Florida, until I moved to Atlanta a few years back.
So what does a director of community outreach and education, what is that job? Because that's not something I would think of when I would think of an entertainment venue.
Sure. You know, when we look at the arts, we look at the really profound human impact it has. That human impact can be leveraged, strictly to enrich our audiences and our main performances. But we also know that it can do a lot for young people in terms of education, in terms of building their learning, increasing their inspiration around curriculum. We also can use it in the community to bridge gaps and sort of buoy and strengthen neighborhoods.
Interesting.
So music education, I think, is a very important topic. And I don't know how Atlanta stacks in terms of our program versus other states or other cities.
Well, we do pretty well, and there are certainly cities ahead of us. And you're right, this issue of music education, arts education, has become increasingly important. We're living in a world where acquiring data is really as easy as the palm of your hand anymore. And as we look at the job force of the future,
but Mark, soon it's going to be built into your clothes. I just want to point that out.
That's right. Then we'll have our smart suits.
That's right.
That we wear to work.
Because it's going to be like Star Trek, where you just touch the little thing on your chest and say, beam me up, Scotty.
Absolutely. Or give me the history of, and there it is.
Right. And it'll be in your sunglasses where you see the results.
Now, wouldn't that be cool? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be cool?
I got it all figured out.
See, but now once we access that information, the next big question is, how do we use it? And I think what we're seeing more and more is the future of industry and the future of business is about who can think creatively and with great innovation. And that's where the arts come in.
So by engaging the community, you look to build more interest across the spectrum from the youth all the way up to, you know, adults and seniors in the arts and the symphony as an art center for here in the city.
Oh, absolutely. We know that arts make better students, that young people involved in the arts become leaders. They perform better on SAT tests. They're more likely to graduate. We know that communities that are arts rich have lower crime, are better equipped to tackle poverty. And we believe that everybody has a right to access that. So when we talk about community programs, we're talking about bringing those benefits to absolutely every citizen possible.
Well, there's a couple of things that are popping into my head as you're talking. And one is that, you know, at least from, again, somebody who's not completely involved in that world, that it seems like the federal funding just keeps getting lower and lower for the arts and for getting arts into schools. And I mean, same thing with physical education, since we were talking about sports, but all those things that are not deemed, you know, core, central, you know, math, science, reading, or everything else, seems like the funding is falling away. Is that affecting what you're doing?
Oh, tremendously. Schools really, really are struggling to balance their budgets and still serve the needs of kids. With such high pressure on testing in the classroom around math and language arts, there really seems to be very little room for other subject areas, including physical education, including the arts. And schools now turn to community organizations like ours to help fill that gap.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other thing I have noticed about not just the arts, but a lot of the I don't even know how to describe it. I guess it is mostly could fall under the umbrella of the arts. But I think like there seems to be the crowd just seems to be getting older and older. And, you know, I used to own a bookstore and I did a lot of book related events and things at like the Atlanta History Center and Margaret Mitchell House and things like that. And that so I guess we'll books are arts and we'll call that arts too. But
sure.
But, you know, I worry about that because I feel like there is so much to be gained from having an appreciation for classical music, for literature, for, you know, fine art and all of that. And kids are just I don't know if their attention spans aren't I don't know what it is, but it's not doesn't seem to be getting out there.
No, it really doesn't. And a lot of these older people that you see who are participating in the arts grew up with the arts as part of their life, as part of their educational structure.
Sure.
Unfortunately, in the last few decades, it's kind of fallen back. And now we have people raising children who they themselves have not experienced the arts. It sort of has just waned a little bit from the mainstream culture in terms of live performance. But now almost everybody has an iPod and has got music that they love.
Sure.
Or might attend a concert that's a pop concert, but they don't necessarily always connect that to it's a music industry that the symphony is very much a part of.
Right. So how do you draw young people to the symphony?
Well, it's a good thing that you ask. One of the ways we do that is looking at different ways to present the art. You know, maybe the standard way of sitting for an hour and a half, 2 hours in a very quiet, still, that just doesn't resonate with a younger audience as much.
Yeah.
So you look at shorter concerts, you look at more varied repertoire so that the music speaks a little bit more to them, relax the environment a little bit more. It's okay if you come in jeans to the symphony, which many people wouldn't believe, but it is okay.
Well, is there, I think one of the things that I'm really being picky now, I'm sorry. But
no, I'm just excited to find out you can wear jeans to the symphony.
I know, you should have seen her face light up too. She's got a little sparkle in her eyes. She's like, okay.
Mark, you're already changing my view.
Okay, well now you have no reason not to be there.
But I do think that's, you know, one of the things I remember, my mom was very into classical music, is still very into classical music. She plays piano and goes to symphony in her city and all of that kind of stuff, and always has, and dragged us with her. And that's what it felt like when we were kids. And I always enjoyed the music, but I felt like there was nothing to look at. And I'm sure that's even worse for my kids because mm-hmm. they're even more visual than we were.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I know there's some things out there, like, you know, where they show cartoons or something while there's music. Is that something, is adding a visual component something that you guys think about?
Yeah, actually, one of the things that the symphony is doing, which is considered to be fairly innovative for symphonies, is something we call theater of a concert, which brings in a lot of dramatic and visual elements along with the live orchestra performance. So you may have a singer, an actor, a dancer, you have scenery, you've got projections and really colorful lighting. All this makes it really a multi-sensory experience and gives you something to look at. What we do really, really well, though, is use those elements to enhance the music, not distract or replace
right.
the music experience. It actually heightens the emotional impact of it.
Right. Well, because when you think about, apparently I got really into this topic, but when you think about like the shows that are really popular that, you know, like Cirque, and like Blue Man Group and things like that. They're not quote unquote popular music where people can sing right. along and they know the words. It's not like that. It's just that they're getting a full experience.
Absolutely.
Right. Full sensory.
Right. And experience. I think that would actually help a lot to kind of re-romanticize the symphony. I'm just giving you my opinion.
No. I think you're absolutely right on the market and on the pulse
sounds
of,
like
of where the future
is. Sounds like they're already on it, Dana.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
No, we're starting. But, you know, we've got more to do across the board. I think in terms of making more music accessible, that theater of a concert concept is something we do a few times during the year. Same time, we also try and do concerts that meet our more traditional audience who want it to be the same, you know.
Right. But
that's
they're
interesting because I was thinking about when we had Jennifer Schwartz on and she was talking about from an art standpoint and as an art gallery looking to get younger people into art and
right.
how to do that and how to make it more like how do you turn Gen Y into art collectors? And that's sort of what we're talking about here. How do you turn these Gen Y people that are growing up today into people that will go to the symphony?
Right. And more importantly, I think, even though we don't like to talk about this, this is Business Radio X. So, you know, even more importantly, not just that they'll go, but that they'll support.
Right.
The
it
arts.
Has to be that, a sustainable right. entity yeah. in the community.
That they'll put their money towards it and see that there's value in it.
Absolutely. And this is something sometimes people lose sight of is that the arts are an industry. And money that is spent on a ticket actually is reinvested by an arts organization in services and employment, in taxes very often, in local vendors. We actually contribute more money back into an economy than what we take out.
Yeah.
So that makes us a really, really good choice for both quality of life and economic growth for any community.
I was going to say, too, another thing. My head's jumping around a little. I'm about up to about a half a cup of coffee now, so I'm getting a little better. But, you know, I think another thing that people are really obsessed with in today's culture is celebrity. And there have been, over the years, one or two sort of famous celebrity classical musicians or conductors or whatever. But it's pretty rare, I think, that somebody has name recognition
yeah.
out of that world. So, is that something that you guys work on, sort of getting the people to be sort of individually more recognizable?
Certainly. We do that for a variety of reasons. It certainly helps a draw when you can do that. It helps to draw audiences.
Sure.
But we also do it because it helps to humanize the experience.
Absolutely.
When I can identify with that conductor or that that guest artist or a musician in the symphony, then I connect to it. Personally, more strongly than if it's just a sea of, you know, black and white tuxedos playing.
That is a great point. I have to say, I'm sure anyone who has kids can relate to this because whenever you go to see a show or a sporting event that your child is in, your eyeballs are 100% on your child. Like what everybody else is doing, like, oh, somebody just fell off the stage over there. Didn't even see it. I was looking at little Joe over here.
Doing
you know, like,
nothing. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
how
I think that's
to see.
Right. And I think it's true with it for me, like we were talking about sports and I'm not a particularly big sports fan, but I do get dragged to the games from time to time. Not dragged. I enjoy it. But usually if I know the name of a player or two, if they are somewhat of a celebrity to me, that's who I'm looking at.
You're right. It just adds to that element of excitement. And, you know, both in sports and in the arts, we're really about that experience.
Yeah.
And so if you know someone or you have a personal connection with whoever's involved or you know that cellist lives down the block from you or in your neighborhood,
sure.
It just heightens it a little bit more for you. You feel a little bit more invested.
Well, another reason I guess I was thinking about this, I don't know, I'm really making myself so obvious about what I'm all about because I'm kind of into reality TV. Mm-hmm. And so I'm watching Dancing with the Stars, although I'm several weeks behind. I have to admit I have it TiVo'd. But anyway, one of the contestants this year is a classical singer.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a perfect example of somebody who's sort of, building a name and becoming popular from the classical world. And then I think that's going to draw more people back to her art
yeah,
you know, who are going to be more interested in buying her records and watching her perform. So I think that's kind of a really great crossover.
Yeah, it really is nice when that can happen. And, you know, we see that level of celebrity in someone perhaps like Yo-Yo Ma, the cellist, who not everybody knows, but a lot more people know of him than any other classical musician.
Yeah, when I said a celebrity, he's the name that popped right
into the other cellists out there. That would be...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there have been some notable recent collaborations that at Atlanta Symphony Orchestra with some big names. Who should we know or be on the lookout for in the coming weeks? Anybody of fame?
You know, we just announced our season, and we're getting ready to just tie up the current season. You know, I can certainly talk that.
Yeah, how does the season run, Mark? I don't even know.
Me neither.
The schedule.
Help us out.
It's like a mid-year.
Yeah, definitely. What we do is the fall. Yeah, the fall to the late spring, early summer, when primarily the time when people want to be indoors more. When it gets
like
to
a
be summer.
Year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, we do have the outdoor amphitheaters that we run. We do ASO Presents at both Chastain and Verizon Wireless Amphitheater during the summers.
Wait, can we get tickets? Can we get some goodies? Oh, nice. Kim, we have a silent guest over here, Kim, who's shaking her head. Yes, I love her. New best friend.
Well, and you know, and it's a good opportunity.
Giveaway.
It's a good opportunity for me to point out that, you know, we are a music institution. And in addition to the classical music, we do have a pop series. We do through ASO Presents, present popular artists. You know, we present Pink Martini and Fish and the
Mark,
Eagles
you're so,
and
you're so
forth.
Cool, Mark. You know all this cool popular stuff.
I just read my emails, really.
Okay, gotcha. So that's all over the summer,
yeah.
The pop series.
Yeah.
Interesting. And at, you said, multiple venues,
yeah,
right?
Verizon Wireless Amphitheater really is our primary venue during the summer, but we also do a really strong series at Chastain.
Okay. What's Verizon? Verizon is the... old what did it used to be called before it became commercial? Sorry,
is that the Lakewood?
Is that Lakewood?
Oh no! We're
no,
this is
different.
Up in Alpharetta.
Oh,
this
Alpharetta
is brand
new. The
new
one. Oh, that started out commercial, right? Gotcha.
Yeah, we started that way.
Gotcha. I know what you mean now. I used to live out
I
that
know,
way.
It is, now all the venues have.
I know it's like it gets confusing. I liked it when they were sort of more related to where they were.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, right. Or a person at least that you were honoring or something. But now. You're like, huh? What? Where?
Yeah, but it is a sign of the way that the business does come into the arts and get involved, and as well receive the benefits of some visibility along with patrons.
No, you're totally right.
Patrons, so
if it wasn't for
that's
that,
a good thing.
No, you're right.
We love our sponsors.
It's yes. It's like sad
we
but
love
good
our
at the same time.
Too.
Yes, we do. It's the Verizon Good Morning Atlanta
right.
Show. We'd be okay with that. Okay
just in case
that.
Anyone's listening. Right?
That's right. That's right. And if and I keep saying if anyone wants to be our breakfast sponsor and like bring us breakfast, we would be all about that too. So feel free to come on up with some donuts, some bagels, whatever you got. Okay. So what else do we need to know? So you said you just finished the first, not the first, but this most recent season is just wrapping up.
Yeah. We're really on the...
we've got the summer stuff to look forward to. And then... Fall of 2012.
Yep, yep. Then we start into a whole another season. Wonderful guest artists, some really nationally significant works being done. We love to do new composers as well as the composers from days way gone by. But we really offer a variety of music. We have concerts almost every weekend during season. We're thrilled to be going back to Carnegie Hall again this year. We're one of the few orchestras around the country actually invited by Carnegie Hall to be a part of a series they've got featuring America's Greatest Orchestras.
And when does that take place?
In the coming season, we are scheduled.
You can talk out loud. We can't hear you, Kim. It's okay.
Kim's over here feeding me dates.
There you go.
October. So
it makes us sound like our studio is bigger, like there's people hanging out in the background, groupies and such.
It's a crowd here.
That's right.
That's my entourage.
That's right. So that happens in October, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what were some of the highlights from this past season? What were some of the really big, exciting things that happened?
You know, we had some wonderful performances. We have a principal guest conductor, Donald Runicles, who was in town and led the orchestra through a really complicated, complex piece. By Mahler that was, for classical music fans, was completely a win. It was absolutely soul-stirring. Our gala this year featured Bernadette Peters.
Oh, awesome.
Which, again, shows sort of the range of music experiences we try and bring. But it was wildly successful. She is doing phenomenally. Her show was strong. She was strong, and she just really won the audience over. And we were at capacity for it.
Now, when you say gala, What does that mean? Describe that event.
Sounds like tuxedos and evening gowns.
I like
gowns.
The sound of that. You know, you don't get to go to the prom anymore
champagne
when you're 45. So.
No, they're like, yeah, they're grown-up proms, really, kind of, if you think about it, with proms with a cause.
Yeah, exactly. I like it.
Well, you know, the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, like most arts organizations, is a nonprofit organization.
Right.
And in order to keep ticket prices affordable, do great arts, bring in the popular artists that people love so much, as well as doing the great education and community programming we do, we have got to raise money, you know, yep, to balance our budget. We feel that we are a vital part of the cultural fabric of this community and even the social fabric. That gala allows us to raise funds to do that.
Awesome. And is that where is that? Is that in the Woodruff Arts Center?
Yeah, this past year we did it at the Woodruff Arts Center. We had held the dinner part at the High Museum of Art, and the concert was in Symphony Hall, and it was really a lovely, lovely evening.
Nice. Sounds really nice. The Woodruff Arts Center is so nice.
You know, and we really have been focusing in the short time I've been there. I'm hearing a lot of conversation about it really expanding beyond just being a hub, but more of a focus of energy that radiates out into the community and brings the community in. Creating relevance of the arts is kind of the frontier of the future for us.
I think it's one of those things, too, where, you know, I go to the Woodruff Arts Center. I mean, I'm there usually for something a couple times a year, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I always sort of forget how nice it is until I walk in the doors again, you know. Yeah. And I spend a lot of my Atlanta time living in the suburbs. I'm thankfully a few blocks from the Woodruff Arts Center now, so now I can walk there, actually. But when I was living in the suburbs, I couldn't really motivate myself to drive in and park, and you know, you just think it's sort of a hassle. It takes 40 minutes to get into the city, or whatever hour if it's rush hour, you know, that kind of thing. But I think people need to be reminded really of how nice it really is, and what a nice evening and what a nice experience, and how to really, that's a about sort of enjoying your city.
It really is. With this location in Midtown, you can walk to a variety of restaurants and other establishments surrounding the Woodruff Arts Center, and then on campus, you've got Alliance Theater, you've got High Museum of Art, you've got Atlanta Symphony Hall. It really is a very rare jewel that's sitting there. And we often encourage people who don't want to fight the traffic, and I got to tell you, I'm one of them, but who don't want to fight that traffic, that really you can go to a MARTA station in your area and take the train immediately down into Arts Center Station, which is right there. It is the easiest way to get there and to get out without any hassle.
That's true.
And it's very convenient for MARTA.
Cheap, too, to take MARTA. So, yeah, that's a good point. I that's the other thing I would forget about that. You know, I would forget because when you don't live in the city, you sort of don't realize how close the stations are to different things. And so you think, well, I want to do that and then have to walk at whatever. But you really don't. The station's really right there.
Yeah. And it really, plus it's green.
It's green. That's right. And that's huge these days. That's an interesting question, actually, though. It's probably not part of your job. But is the Symphony and Woodruff Arts Center doing anything specific to sort of be more green and sustainable?
Absolutely. You know, we see ourselves as an arts organization to be good citizens and good custodians of this planet. Like everybody else, we're not exempt because we're an arts organization. So we do look at monitoring our energy usage. There's a huge screen that's in the lobby of the Woodruff Arts Center that actually allows the public to view how we're using electricity, where we're making savings. And we take it as a very serious part of what we do. We also recycle throughout the building. We always look for ways that we can join others in saving the planet.
Awesome.
We like to hear that.
Yeah.
We do. It's good business.
I also wanted to hear about the When I Play Music campaign. This is also kind of interesting to me because it looks like it's being driven primarily by social media.
Mm-hmm.
The giving campaign. Tell us a little bit about this one, because now that we've talked about how important the arts are, I want people to know where they can send their money if they want to support the arts.
I think that is an excellent idea.
And so do I.
Imagine that.
You know what we really love about this campaign is it's really more about building friends and support than it is raising huge amounts of money. It is a $5 campaign, and it's intentionally set at that level so that people can participate very easily. We're going to make a really strong push on that campaign May 1st to the 31st, the whole month of May, and we're asking people just to give $5 to make sure that young people have music in their lives. And it's a very easy thing for anyone to do to buy in to the concept of music education.
And how do they do that again?
They'll be able to do it by going to aso.org/give5. And that's the numeral 5, not spelled out, but aso.org/give5. And we hope to raise $40,000 through this, but we really hope to raise a lot more awareness, a lot more people willing to raise their hands and say, I support the arts in the lives of my kids.
That's really cool. And $5, I mean, you know, everybody in this city spent at least that buying a lottery ticket last week. I'm just
no
saying.
Kidding.
Absolutely.
At least
and they'll
five.
Get a better return on this. You know, when we did this campaign this past year, I was able to increase our access funding for underserved students by – I was able to double it because we got this kind of support through
wow.
this campaign. So I have students from low-income communities who have never – been out of their neighborhoods and into an arts experience, walking to our hall for a full symphony that was tied to their curriculum.
And did they love it?
They absolutely loved it. Absolutely.
That would really change like your whole paradigm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because we talk about access to the arts. Oddly enough, we find really, really young people are still very open to it.
Yeah.
Something happens once you get about 6, 7, 8, I think, and more ingrained in school that all of a sudden you start making other judgments about the arts. But inherently, innately, we are drawn to the arts.
That's interesting. So sure. It's almost like you have to catch them when they're really young and then foster that. Like,
absolutely.
So they feel that it's cool and it's mm-hmm. a good thing to be a part of and not geeky or embarrassing or nerdy or whatever. Because I think that's part of what happens is the other kids go, well, like, oh, you're in the band or the orchestra. That's dorky. But,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
you
right,
could
I'm
be.
I'm on the football team.
Right.
I got
exactly.
the padded jersey.
Exactly.
So
I think it's getting, maybe it is. I think there's, like everything these days.
But music is cool. It's super cool.
Right. And so. I think there's more, I don't know, it seems to me that kids now, there's like, we went through fate, of course, everything is, you know, cyclical and all of that, but it does seem like kids are sort of more open right now to a lot of different things, and a lot of what's going on TV, to be honest, I think is helping that, you know, that it's not dorky to ballroom dance, for God's sake, or, you know, to sing classically or whatever. I think there's just a lot of more openness to different kinds of talent and, you know, different interests, which I think is great.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the ways that media has influenced the arts. I mean, between Dancing with the Stars and Glee and
right.
even American Idol now, it's hard to go a week and watch when you watch the contestants sing without them being accompanied by violins or brass instruments or something
right.
of that nature that are right there on stage. It's not being digitally done.
Right, and I think you're right. I think that's like Glee is a very good point. I mean, Glee is making it sort of cool to be a Gleek,
you
know,
yeah.
which I mean is like pretty amazing because obviously those were the kids as evidenced in the show who were getting slushies thrown on them. But now it's sort of like, oh, you can sing. That's cool.
That's
you
very
know,
cool.
Yeah. And all the stuff that goes along with it, because the kids that are the coolest on that show are the ones that can sing and play and dance. And you know what I mean? So,
yeah, it's really a very different climate than it was back when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I hope it keeps going that direction. I really do.
Yeah, I do, too. I think we can help move that along. We'll do our best.
Sure.
Well, Mark, I think you have a pretty cool job.
I love my job.
What else do you do in the community? I mean, it sounds like every day is different in terms of engaging different sectors within the community and building the awareness of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra.
You know, particularly in our community programs, we are on board with a special project with the Smithsonian Institute and Georgia Humanities Council on an exhibit they call New Harmonies, The Roots of American Music. And it really celebrates root music, things like bluegrass, gospel, things that are uniquely American music. This exhibit will tour throughout the state of Georgia in 12 cities and allow them to also celebrate their local heritage, whether that's shape note singing or something similar. So we're partnering with them and trying to really get local communities proud of the instrumental music that they produce, but then also to bridge the gap between what they do and what we do and create more of a sense of community.
Nice. So it's going beyond just the city of Atlanta and broadening to the whole state, bringing everybody in.
Yeah. We're a nationally recognizable orchestra, so we feel like we really need to serve the entire state of
now,
Georgia.
Now, I was talking to Corey a little bit about this when mm-hmm. we met, about how the different orchestras in the different cities kind of, well, work together / compete. There's a little bit of
sure.
a competitiveness, you know, Philadelphia Orchestra versus New York Orchestra versus Atlanta.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I think whatever
the culture of the
sure.
cross-city orchestra.
Do they have tight-fitting four-way stretch uniforms?
I don't know, but that might be a way to reach a new audience.
I bet you it would.
You know, it's. I think anybody who's involved in something where they're really tapping into their talent, whether it's a sports talent, a business talent, or an artistic talent, love pushing themselves to the pinnacle of success. And that's where that competition comes from. Everyone's looking to have that wonderful group of artists with a wonderful conductor tackling really great music, but pushing that level of artistry higher and higher. So it's very good, friendly competition, but all out of the vein of pushing the level of artistry and seeing what we can accomplish. And that's really cool.
That's cool. I like to see Atlanta competing on these kind of important benchmarks for top city.
That's right, on the national stage, as
exactly.
it were, or international.
Actually, and speaking of international, you know, the Metro Atlanta Chamber has been in China And getting a lot of interesting insights about what's going on building the Atlanta business in China.
Are they back yet?
Be getting Mayor Kasim Reed into the studio later on this week. I'm not confirmed 100%,
but either this week or next week.
So I'm going to be asking him all about it.
That's very exciting.
Got any questions you want me to ask Mayor Reed when he's here?
I'm going to get nervous and clam up if the mayor's here. Mark is making me pretty nervous, but if the mayor is here, forget it.
Well, when he's here, ask him about his high school choral experience. He's a huge proponent of music education because of his own life.
Nice.
And how important he feels it was in terms of developing him as a leader. So he's got a good testimonial behind that.
Hey, that's another thing. You should advertise like who's in the audience. If you get celebrities, like if you get the mayors come into a show, then people will come just because they want to be at the same thing as the mayor or local celebs or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's
another way to go.
Cool people come to them. We actually are hoping to tap into a lot of athletes and local personalities, business personalities who have a background or a secret interest in music and the arts so that we can, you know, kind of unveil how much it is a part of many people's lives that they're considered to be role models.
That is interesting. I wonder how many people that you would never guess like that, you know, were in the choir or in the band when they played the cello or something.
Yeah. Yeah. My brother is a good example. He's like he doesn't do anything particularly in the arts now. He's, you know, in his 40s. He's a deputy chief prosecutor in LA, mm-hmm. you know, like this big serious lawyer. And he played the cello growing up. You know, yeah.
It's part of what made him who he is today.
Sang in the choir, you know. I sang in the choir, not well.
But you sang, and
but
that's what's important.
I did, very quietly in the back row, very, very quietly. Because if it was any louder than that, I would get kicked out of the choir. So
And it's so important for people to know.
Tune it down, Barrett.
but everyone should sing. I think everyone should sing. I think everyone should dance. And sometimes in the arts, we tend to make it something only for specially talented people. No, those are the ones who make a living at it and get celebrity. But we all sing. We all have an innate sense of musicality that we need to celebrate.
Yeah, it's part of our humanity.
It really is.
I think sing badly in the shower.
And in the car. Uh-huh. I think we should.
And then go to the symphony and see how it's really done.
Exactly.
And then go sing some more.
I think that'd be a really cool ad campaign if you got like all the sort of famous people who and showed them with whatever instrument they played or mm-hmm. in a choir robe or whatever and let people know that they were a part of this or are a part of it or show them with their tickets like sitting in the audience. I think that'd be kind of cool.
I think so too.
Why am I jumping in trying to like, can you guys hire me is really what I'm saying.
Write
that down.
No, that would be great. And again, it goes back to that thing of connecting the experience to a broader community. And, you know, if that ball player is a hero of mine and they like the symphony, then maybe I should pay more attention.
Right. Or this rapper guy that's like super popular or whatever doing rap music now had a background in his high school band or something, you know, played an instrument like, oh, maybe I should play an instrument.
Yeah.
And I just think that's kind of a cool thing. Totally off on a tangent this morning, but I'm loving it. It's a fun tangent to be on. It's much more fun than like people losing money or us being like the most stressful city in the country
so
or whatever.
You didn't win the lottery. I figured when I saw you this morning.
Yeah. $2.
I would be hosting alone if you were a mega million.
I won $2. It was funny because I was talking to someone yesterday who had their quote unquote winning ticket and she won like $7, this friend of mine. And another woman that was in the room at the time said, well, but how much did you spend? And she just said, but I won $7. But how much did you spend? Well, I won $7. So that's my thing. I'm not telling you how much I spent, but I won $2.
That's a positive outlook right there.
There you go. That's right. Seeing the glass half full and all mm-hmm. that. So did they talk about who actually did win? Do we know?
I think they're playing it on the DL because like our guest last week, we're talking about if you do end up scoring and winning the lottery, you've got to like go underground immediately or the vultures are all over you.
That's true. The symphony would be calling you for a donation.
You better believe it. And more than $5.
So it seems like I thought it was one person in Maryland, but I haven't really heard anything about the other winners. They said there were multiple people. But
you would think the states
would
at least.
They're hiding.
But you would think the states would at least say, like,
we got one.
Right. I almost think
they're obvious that they're counting the tax revenue already.
It's funny because I think almost that's like a you know, for them, it would be good advertising to say, maybe not to show who won because that's not fair, but to sort of say, you know, hey, a housewife from Peoria won and she's now going to be able to do this, this and that. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to it just disappearing.
Yeah. I mean, people want to know that someone is really winning that money.
Yeah.
Because then they have a chance.
I mean, this year, this particular drawing was so, it was all over the news. It was like huge.
National, right.
And then people, it's just dead. Like the story's over and we don't know what happened. Yeah. It's sort of like fizzles out. You're like, oh, okay, well, I guess that's over.
We're like thousands of people in lines, like right around the state's perimeter. Oh, people are driving in.
Oh, wow.
All of our bordering states. To...
It was kind of amazing. I was in the Publix grocery shopping the night, you know, of the where you had to buy the ticket by, I guess, 10 o'clock at night, or I forget what time. But anyway, there was a line the whole time I was in the Publix of people lined up to get a ticket. I've never seen that before.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
They made a lot of money.
Yeah.
That day. That week, I guess, the lottery. And that's all for education. Well, I guess a large portion of that is for education, too. So I guess, you know, it's a good thing in the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a good cause.
And it gives us all something to fantasize about, you know, other than four-way stretch. I'm just saying. Why do I keep going back to that? I don't know.
It'll be with you for the rest of the day, I'm suspecting.
Oh, my God, it totally will. And I'll be tagging on, like, later shows, and people will go, like, what is she talking about? I don't even understand that.
You've got to listen all day long to Business Radio X. What else do we have on the schedule?
That's a good question. We have the 200 Peachtree Show coming up this afternoon. I'm not sure who Alan's guests are, but he always has some interesting downtown folks coming in and sort of talking about what's going on in and around here, in and around 200 Peachtree Street. And this afternoon we'll have Showbiz Atlanta, which is about the business side of the entertainment industry. We could have had you guys on there just as easily to talk about the symphony, because we talk about all kinds of, you know, music and movie production and TV production and whatever. Last week on there, I had Rock and Roll Hall of Fame drummer Kirk Sarkisian was on with me last week on that show. It was a great interview, a really interesting guy doing a lot of cool stuff. And actually, he was on primarily to promote a charity event that had nothing to do with, and you know, music or entertainment. Was just something. And but we talked about, because of that, we talked about people in the arts giving back. And it's hard because the arts themselves are a nonprofit, mm-hmm. you know, but then when there are sort of the celebrities and whatever in the arts, not just movie stars, but you know, whoever is successful, you always want to see those people giving back.
Absolutely. And no, we even our own musicians who are considered celebrities in their own right, but not in the way that you're talking
about. But they're not Brad Pitt. They're not bajillion-dollar celebrities, right?
But they still contribute hundreds and hundreds of hours every year out in the community as volunteers, performing in nursing homes, homeless shelters, library schools, just to give back to the community. And that's kind of a lot of the artist mentality of sharing that gift with everybody when they can.
Yeah, I really love that. I mean, one of the things that, you know, in the book world, too, when I was a big part of that world, and a lot of authors have either their own charities where they do something where they're giving back, or, you know, or they're a part of and raising money for and raising awareness for other organizations, and often have to do with literacy and reading and those kinds of things. But anyway, very cool. I love to see that. And I love to see that in the arts with music, you know, too, because there are so many places to kind of give your money to help raise awareness and get music into schools and into neighborhoods where it needs to be and all that. So it's all good stuff.
It really is.
What else is going on, Elizabeth? We're getting close to the end of the show. I don't want to.
I know we're
get
almost
too crazy.
Out of time here. Well, other than Mayor Kasim Reed, and/or Commissioner Yvonne Yancey, and/or Commissioner Michelle Epps stopping by the studio later on this week, we've had a full schedule. Tuesday we did the Results Matter show, and this is Autism Awareness Month, if you're not aware.
And now we are.
Now you are.
Good job. Now we are.
Check out the rebroadcast of that show. It was quite moving.
Wow.
Yes. Moving. Very powerful stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good job. Well, switching gears totally then, I have to also just say that apparently we just had Bacon Fest here in Atlanta.
I saw that.
I kind of love that that's a thing.
Yeah, I've never
that
heard
you could
of it.
Create what, an entire fest.
Yes,
just is, about bacon.
I could, but I just didn't know a city could.
No, it's this. Not only can they, we. Not only can we do. And in fact, this was the 12th annual Bacon Fest.
Get out of here!
And not only that, apparently it's a very silly, fun festival. Lots of foods like chocolate covered bacon and kinds of interesting things like that. But also this year, they actually had Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon showed up
at the Bacon Fest.
And is there a bacon queen?
I don't know if there's. That's a good question. I know there's like all kinds of carnival games and food tents, and I think it's just I'm sure there's a lot of drinking going on. I don't know if it's bacon related drinking, but it could be.
Bacon does go good with beer, so
bacon goes good. Like bacon goes good with anything. Just really? Sure. Slap some bacon on it and it's delicious.
There must be a bacon martini out there somewhere.
I bet there is. And if there's not, I think you could invent one.
But I would go to this festival. I'd never heard of it.
Yes.
1,200 pounds of bacon was donated for the festival.
And the festival was sold out, people. Wow. Sold out.
Can't wait till the last minute for Bacon Fest tickets.
So I guess just keep your eye out next year because it's always, I think, around the end of March. So just probably the last weekend in March, something like that. So keep your eye out. Next year, you too can attend Bacon Fest. Maybe you could get the symphony involved.
We could play some. Well,
come on.
Raised money for Dad's Garage, you know, the comedy venue.
Yeah, so that's their. Yeah, so that maybe. Did they start it? I wonder if they started it.
Maybe.
That would make great sense.
Bacon Fest sounds like an improv sketch.
It really does.
It just hasn't stopped for 12 years.
Yeah. I think you guys should get the symphony involved. I think that would be cool.
I would be up for it.
Changing the profile, the demographic.
Oh, yeah. Just don't bring any instruments that are really valuable because you don't want grease and all that on them. Yeah. You know, just saying. But anyway, Kevin Bacon, Bacon Fest. I just had to bring it up.
Speaking of festivals and fun things to do around the city, there's a cool concert planned at Centennial Olympic Park.
Oh, I saw that. A ticketed event for the first time in ever, maybe?
Because usually all those are free concerts downtown at Centennial Park.
Yeah, so how are they going to do that? Do you know? Are they going to block it off in some way?
It's difficult to control, but I would bet that they're probably going to rent a lot of those metal fences.
I guess you're right. And have like
fence
sort of
it up all over.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Do you know who the concert is? I didn't see that part.
The Flaming Lips.
Oh.
Young the Giant.
Wow.
And a couple other
So
folks.
They'll be a pretty big draw. I
mean, $25.
Nice.
The Flaming Lips are popular. Yeah, it should be a good time. I love seeing concerts in Centennial Park. It's a fun place to sit outside this time of year.
Yeah.
3 months in the future?
Not as much. Well, one of the problems, yeah, is it gets so, there's no shade, and it gets so hot out there if it's daytime in the summer. But you're right. Now, spring, good time.
It was a good choice.
As long as the pollen settles down, because golly, I mean, I have never, this year is so bad. I have never been this affected. I mean, this year I look in the mirror and my eyes are, bright red, and I'm like, I look like I'm, you know, smoking the funny stuff. And that never happened to me before. This is the first year where it's been that bad for me, so.
Yeah, it was wrecked really fast and really intense.
Like, yeah.
Like yeah, it's been brutal.
Really has.
I think it'll be over next week.
Okay, well, let's plan for that.
Yeah, put that on your schedule.
Put that on schedule, yeah.
So before we wrap up, Mark, give us again all the contact information for people who want tickets, for people who want to give you money, you know, if they want to send you a personal check. Just throw all that out there.
Sure. You know, well, the best way for anyone to get in touch with us is through our website, which is www.aso.org. There you can find schedule information. You can find in-depth information about our education and outreach programs, information on our seasons at Verizon Wireless Amphitheater and Chastain, and very importantly, information on ways to give and support the great work that we're doing.
Awesome.
Terrific. Yeah, and taking a look at this schedule, both all the summer stuff as well as the upcoming season.
Yeah, pick out some stuff for us because Kim said she'd give us
definitely
tickets.
Definitely got it.
And we could
out.
Get some tickets for our listeners, too. We could maybe do some drawings or something, get some people involved, get out there to see how cool it is to be a part of the symphony world.
Yeah. Well, I think we've upped the cultural quotient of our city this morning.
And ourselves. For God knows, we're not normally this cultured. We normally don't know what we're doing around here, do we?
You just didn't know it.
That's right. I think that's probably true for a lot of people, don't you?
Yeah.
Because I think there is actually, a lot of us have some knowledge from being kids, some background. We just sort of forget that it's there. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can all just get more of it starting today. Starting today. I think that's the plan.
There you go.
All right. Well, I will wrap it up, I guess, right here.
Yeah, and thanks, Mark Kent, for joining us here in the studio today.
What a great way to spend a morning. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.
Good morning to all of you Atlantans.
Enjoy your day, and we'll see you next week.